Hi everyone, I'm Yaz from UF. I'm a master's student, and I'm going to tell you about the origins of deep fossilized carbon in coastal plain soils. So why does soil carbon matter? At a local scale, we think about carbon being important for improving soil fertility, improve water retention, nutrient retention, cation exchange capacity. But at a broader scale, it has an important role in the global carbon cycle because there's more carbon in the soil than in vegetation and the atmosphere combined. And so knowing carbon budgets and where carbon is distributed on the landscape is important for managing the global carbon cycle. So the area that I look at is a depositional landform. It formed millions of years ago during periods of rising and falling sea levels. And how do you use this thing? There we go. So 2 to 3 million years ago, this sequence was formed because high energy waves were crashing and depositing coarse materials, and it formed this ridge. So these ridges have large accumulations of sand, and it's an ideal environment for translocation of deep soil carbon. And so there's a huge pool of carbon out there, and we don't know a whole lot about it because it's very deep. And so every once in a while we see it in soil surveys and literature, but we really don't know how much is out there. Most often this pool of carbon is reported as a B'H, and the prime just denotes the reoccurrence of an identical soil horizon. And so here we have mapped soil series that are characterized having a B'H or potentially having a B'H. But there's also the idea that this deep pool of carbon actually transgresses the landscape. And if that's the case, then we might not see it as a B'H. We might see it as a deeper BH. And so here I have mapped soils that have a BH showing up at 130 centimeters or greater. And if it does transgress the landscape, then it's possible that we auger to 2 meters and we don't catch it at all. And so here we have soils that are classified as sands. They're very deep sands. And all of these soils that I mentioned actually have a very close spatial relationship with these shoreline features. And the relationship is particular because if you look at ultisols and alphasols, they only have, they have a 90% probability of occurring within 35 to 40 kilometers from a shoreline feature. So these soils are more likely to occur near these features. And so now that we know where it is, how much is out there? Because it's most likely reported as a B'H, all of my PEDON observations are of soils that have a B'H in them. And we estimate that there is 71 megagrams of carbon per hectare in this pool of carbon. So that's a lot of carbon. It's comparable to the above ground biomass of a temperate forest, the top 30 centimeters of wetland soils in the region, and the top 30 centimeters of Arctic permafrost. So it's a lot of carbon, and it's actually a huge underestimate because the average sampling depth in all the observations is 189 centimeters. And sometimes it'll continue deeper than 189. Sometimes it'll show up deeper than 189. And so we don't really know the thickness of it. And we don't know the depth to the bottom of it in 69 out of 80 observations. But if we want to scale up, we have to set ranges. And based on literature and based on Sergal map units. So we estimate that there is between 0.4 and 2 billion tons of carbon stored in this pool of carbon in the southeast U.S. And southeast U.S. is known for being a hot spot for carbon because we have a lot of wetlands, but this actually has more carbon than the region's wetlands on three to seven times smaller land area. So there's more carbon than the literature tells us. And so what I'm curious about is, how did this pool of carbon form, and how sensitive is it to climate change? A lot of people think that it's burial that caused this pool of carbon to appear, but our results indicate that it's not burial. So sodium pyrophosphate extractable carbon, the total carbon, it's a ratio we use to determine if carbon is podzolized. It's a higher ratio in podzolized carbon, where carbon's metal associated, whereas surface carbon is mostly composed of freshly decomposed plant material. And so this ratio is the same for B'H and BH. So it shows that there is a similar pedogenic origin here. And also the sand size distribution is pretty much the same throughout all the profiles. So we don't really see any depositional discontinuities. So we know a whole lot about this shallow BH. We know that it has a close relationship with landscape position, and it forms because of the duration and frequency of near surface saturation. And so in a deeper landscape position or a lower landscape position, this BH tends to be more expressed and it appears deeper. And then at a higher landscape position, it shows up more shallow and it's less expressed. But we haven't really seen those trends in this huge pool of carbon. And so I went out to the field, got some cores here, and this is a major shoreline feature, probably one of the oldest, and made some observations. So the main differences between these pools is that this shallow BH, the color gets lighter through depth, and this one, it gets darker with depth. And this E is a lot lighter than this E, so it's more stripped. And these differences in morphology suggest that there's differences in the hydrologic processes that form these two pools of carbon. And so we have this really weird profile here. We see this orange E above this very large BH horizon. And if this pool formed through near surface saturation, we would expect this E to be a lot lighter because E would be the iron would be reduced and it would be soluble. But we don't see that. So that sort of suggests that there's a deeper water table that's cycling carbon in this pool. And it's actually like a very new idea that lateral podzolization could be occurring and when you see this kind of behavior. And so my research next part will be determining if that's what's occurring in this pool of carbon, and I'll also be doing aerobic and anaerobic incubations to see how sensitive it is to changes in hydrology. Questions?
Okay, well, I've got a quick question.
Yeah.
So how do you picture this, basically this deeper BH interacting with local groundwater changes? So, you know, how is it kind of interacting with itself?
Like if there's a baseline groundwater table?
Yeah, or like I'm thinking if it starts, I'm thinking like some of the almost massive and permeable BHs of some of the tropics, probably here in Florida as well, I've never seen one.
Yeah.
But how they push water tables up.
Right.
You know, similar to our dirt down in Oregon. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if the same thing happens in the system, slowly elevating the groundwater table, or, you know, interacting with regional hydrology or anything like that.
Yeah, we really don't know, because we don't know what's below it. Because if there's clay below it, then it would be perched, and that water would just stay up there. But we have limestone for the most part throughout Florida, and so I would just imagine that the baseline is what's influencing that deeper water table.
Okay.